What happens to me during seminars? And I'm talking about me giving the seminars. This is a thought for today from Dr. Harel Varley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, Director of the Global Seminars, traveling throughout the world, giving seminars in every place where anyone drops a pin, a hat, a penny, a question, or whatever, because we just love giving seminars. What happens to me during a seminar? That's a good question. I love this philosophy. That's rather simple to say. I love this philosophy. This philosophy is me from the word go. Whenever I start talking about philosophy and start talking about these ideas, I don't have to think. I don't have to wonder what I'm going to say next or how I'm going to say it. I just let it flow. So what happens to me during seminars? I have certain key points that I use to give the seminar. Whether in an hour lecture, I have four key points. I think it's kind of nice to divide them. Sometimes I don't get to the second, third, and fourth point. I'm having so much fun with the first point. But many times I do get through all four points. If I don't get through the points, I'm not worried about it. I don't usually carry them over into the next hour, because the next hour I have four more points that I want to share with the people. And my biggest difficulty in giving seminars, and I tell you this is really a major difficulty, is that I look at the people in the seminar right in the face, right in the eyes, and I listen to their heart. Their heart's up in their eyes, their heart's up in their chest. Now you know better than that. I look right into their heart. And I listen to what things are important to them. What are the questions they have in their minds? What are the dreams, the goals, the desires? Our seminar may be on abundance. And then some people come to the seminar who have crazy mixed up relationships and they just don't know how to handle it. Well, I easily move in abundance from abundance of wealth to abundance of harmonious relationships. And it works just perfect. But I'm reaching these people. Now, I'm listening to the most predominant, most dominant question on the minds of people, whoever they may be. I'm listening to that in my heart, and I'm responding to it. And afterwards, the most unlikely people, because it wasn't anything in their heart that I was listening to, I thought, come up to me and they say, boy, you sure got right to the point that I needed to think about. Thank you very much. You must have really read my heart. You must have really known what was going on inside him. To tell you the truth, I wasn't even thinking about you, you know. You can't say that. But they were part of the program. People seem to come with a certain ethic, with a certain demand in their heart, with a certain need in their presence. It's like if you were to go into an area where many peace talks are going on. You would think that the primary issue in the area would be peace talks, and that people would want to talk about peace talks and how to have peace and harmony and right relationships between nations and between peoples and between governments and between economic systems. You'd think that that would be the prominent thing. But you know what's the prominent thing? How I can have peace in my home with my children. You see, it's not with their wife or husband. It's with their children. You see, the children are aliens. Your wife and husband as a team are usually together because they've chosen to. The children, you think, came into the house because they were just accidents, you know, accidents of making love together. But they weren't. Those children chose to come in your house because they were ready for the experience that your home had to give them. And you were ready to have those children in your house because you were ready to take the responsibility that they would bring with them. Now, I sense this and I know this. I'm right in the middle of great peace talks, great harmony talks, nationwide, you know, international and everything else, and So what do? I talk about raising children. I talk about understanding children, listening to their hearts, listening to what it is that they find their values to be. I talk about how do children get along with each other when Big Daddy, the government, the parents, aren't there to guide them. They might be angry for a second and then, hey, I'm not going to waste my playtime being angry. No way. I'm not stupid. I may be just a kid, but I'm not stupid. I'm not going to waste my time being angry. And then they say, hey, can I borrow your shovel? And they just said to Johnny, to Jimmy, Jimmy, I don't like you. Get out of here. I don't want to see you again. And then they're playing together. And Johnny turns to Jimmy and says, Jimmy, can I borrow your shovel? Thank you. What was earth-shaking anger just moments before that was to threaten their entire relationship of their each four-year-old lives or six-year-old lives or however they were, boom, it's gone. May I borrow your shovel? You see, we hold on to grudges. We hold on to anger, and that makes us very improper vehicles for carrying out the work of our life. Because when we have anger in our heart for anybody else, it's anger for ourselves. And it's destructive to ourselves. Little children don't let that fester. You say, a mother says to your child, well, Fred, what were you doing today? Well, playing with so-and-so. Oh, I thought you didn't like them. What do you mean, I didn't like them? Well, they were your worst enemy, you said when you came home yesterday. Oh, they're my best friend today. Well, how did they get to be your best friend? I forgot about yesterday. Oh, you did. You forgot about yesterday. And so now they're your best friend. But wasn't that the terrible thing that they did to you yesterday? See, parents are just really sick. You know, they should just shut up, you know. But they don't. They want to keep harping away and harping away at the illusion. And the kid says, Mom, I like him. But he did those terrible things to you. But Mom, I like him. But how can you be friends with him when he's so unkind and so thought? Mom, that was yesterday. Today is a whole new day, Mom. And see, Mom, this is true of most moms, unfortunately, they hold grudges. They will make their husband act feel like the worst cow dung on the floor of the barn, you know. They will say to their husband, you didn't smile at me this morning when you got up. You didn't kiss me goodbye. You ran out the door. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. Instead of saying, I must make myself more presentable to my husband. I must make sure he gets up early enough so he has time to kiss me goodbye. He has time to sit for a moment and have a cup of coffee with me before he dashes out the door. He'll look at his watch and say, oh my gosh, I got 5 minutes yet before I have to be out there by the bus stop or whatever, you know. And that's planning. You don't just get angry. He didn't do this, he didn't do that. You see, those sort of things are the sort of things that an adult world is made out of. An adult world is made out of, you are the bad ones. You are the ones who did it. Not me. Nothing I can do about it. You're the bad ones. Well, why don't you just go over and apologize? I didn't do anything wrong. Go over and apologize. But I didn't do anything wrong. Go over and apologize. Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry I made you unhappy. I don't know what I did to do it, but don't add that in there. I'm sorry I made you unhappy. And they'll say, oh, okay. And on with the show. They don't want to hold a grudge any more than you want to hold a grudge. But you hold a grudge. You know, there are books written about families who had arguments, families who had the McCoys and the Hatfields, they had forgotten ages ago what it was all about, why they were angry with one another. But they still held on to it because it was their tradition. Now, let our tradition be one of loving. See, when I go to seminars, I listen to people's hearts. And as I listen to their heart, I hear the anger that they have. And so I immediately turn the anger around with love and talk to them about love. And talk to them how they can work with anybody doing anything and bring about a total change. But I was previewing Camelot a little bit the other night. And in Camelot, Lancelot had come from France. And Lancelot, at the age of 13, had conquered the enemy. And he was a legend. And then Lancelot, who was perhaps in his early 30s, Lancelot was powerful, dynamic, wonderful. He loved himself. He thought he was just the greatest thing on earth. And Lancelot heard about King Arthur, and so he wanted to come to Camelot to be part of Arthur's court. And so the first person he bumps into is King Arthur, and they have a fight. he knocks the king off his horse. And the king says, "My gosh, you're good, no anger, no anger." And Lancelot said, "I must slay you in the name of King Arthur." "I am King Arthur." So he says, "I give you my life, I give you my world, I give you my all, I dedicate everything I am to you." And then as he was talking to the other knights, or would-be knights, he says to them, "Well, we should have jousting tournaments. We should have this so that we learn how to be strong and how to be warriors and stuff." And all the rest of them said, "Oh, no, let's dance to the maypole. Let's do lovely things. Let's have spring as the time for making women pregnant, so to have babies in the fall, and things like that." And that's us. "What is all this about? My goodness, this is not warrior stuff." And King Arthur? Guinevere. Guinevere says, "Oh, so this is your problem. So you're a macho guy." And she turned to the rest of the group after he walked away, and she says, "Now, what do you make of him?" And they all said of one accord, "If he had humility, he would be a great being." But you see, they equated humility not with the idea that he was a great warrior and all these things, but that he respected other people as being great warriors. And he realized there could be other people on earth who could be wonderful too. Not better or worse than he, but who could be wonderful too. But his humility didn't include that. And so they did their very best to destroy him. Here he is, the king of the tournament, the best of any that they could have, and they didn't want to destroy him. Not because he was so good, but because he lacked humility. And you see, this is what brings on wars in the world. This is what brings on conflict between nations. The lack of humility. That's why we have diplomats. That's why these diplomats go out and talk to the people of the world and bring about peace and harmony before the war talk even gets started. Our former presidents, and perhaps Bush too, they recognized when there was an upheaval going on in some other nation. And so they'd say to the diplomat or the ambassador in that area, "Go and see the head of that country and ask him if there's anything we can do to help him. Anything we can do, we appreciate him, we honor him, we respect him. We know he's running a great country and he's doing a great job. Da, 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 da." Put a little bit of, pat on the back there. And so our ambassadors, our diplomats, who are different people, go over to the nations of the world and spend time with the leaders of the world, maintaining harmony between them and the rest of the world and ourselves. Now you see, this is what goes through my mind as I'm giving seminars. I am thinking, now Ellen here doesn't have the slightest idea where she's going to be in about 4 days from now, but I do. Ellen is going to be in the office of the embassy, of the Swiss embassy, somewhere. Okay. Now, she is going to have the opportunity to speak to some officials there whom she didn't know she was going to have the opportunity to speak to. And she will say to them some simple statement like, wars are made because people are unhappy with each other. Peace is made when people are happy with themselves. And so, you know, the greatest blessing anyone could give to the world is to train people to like themselves and be at peace with themselves. And then wars wouldn't take place. Now, something like that. And so, a few days later, Ellen is in the embassy taking care of some papers. She had no idea she was going to be there. And as she is there, she stands up when someone walks in the door, and her books all fall off her lap. Her purse flops open on the floor, and the man who walks in says, "Here, let me help you." And so the two of them are picking up all of her goodies, and she says, "Boy, I was just thinking about war and peace." And that's what happens when you think about war and peace. You don't always keep your things together. And then she comes up with these statements, you know. Just, whew, it doesn't matter. And the guy is listening and helping him. And he says, "Good thoughts, madame. Good thoughts. Good thoughts." And he goes away. And here he is, the diplomat from the American coming in to see the Swiss ambassador and to talk to him about whatever. And what might have been a little bit of a problem between the Swiss and the Americans, they have problems now and then. Everything's not just all smooth and cool. But then he brings forth those attitudes, and what might have been a problem was solved. Now, Ellen didn't get in there and say, "La, da, 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 da," and put her hand over their head and say, "You're healed." But she spread the word, as she always spreads the word, and the healing takes place. You see, we don't know where and when we're going to have an opportunity to say something significant, something beautiful, that's going to change the world. It's going to change the world. Ellen, and I use her because she's such an easy target. Ellen is in the supermarket, and she's buying some things, and she's crazy about kids. And so the kid's standing in the basket looking like a little princess, and she says, "My, you are beautiful." And the kid says, "Yes, that's true." And she says, "You must have a beautiful mommy and daddy." And the kid says, "Yes, that's true." And the mommy and daddy are standing right close by, but they're not saying anything. And so then Ellen says, "You know, you must be the greatest peacemaker in the world, because you are so gentle and so loving. Everybody must feel good around you. Everyone must feel their highest and their best when they're around you, because you are peace in your heart and you are love in your heart. I just feel it." And the mommy and daddy are listening to this. And the daddy is the diplomat for Russia or something like that. And or the mommy could be the ambassador or the diplomat, you know. There we have a lot of women who are holding these wonderful posts too. And so they leave the supermarket, you know, nothing more happens. And they go home, and then mommy or daddy has their meeting with higher ups in the echelon, and she talks to them and she says, "When we have love within ourselves, all the problems of the world just seem to fade away." And you know, she says to them, "Mr. Ambassador, or Mr. President, or Mr. whomever, When I stand in front of you, I feel the radiation of your love. I feel the radiation of your peace. I can see why the people of your country selected you as their liaison to carry on the work of peace and love. And I can see why your nation is known as a nation of peace, because you're peace, you see. Blah, 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 blah. Humility. Humility. They didn't say they were. They said you were. And that's the glorious thing. It's just like one of our children came up and had some glasses. And so we took the little girl in for glasses, and they had to be pretty strong. And the boys were standing around her, and, hey, I want glasses too, I want glasses too. And so we said, fine. So we had them checked, and their eyes were perfect, of course. And they didn't need glasses. But I could have said, shut up, kid, you don't need glasses. You don't need to have everything your sister has. Now just shut up, get off my back, blah, 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 blah. You know. But a diplomat says, hey, let's go have them checked. Let's go see if there is a problem. And you see, this is what we oftentimes do. We oftentimes say, well, somebody's got a problem with their chest, so we want to go in and have our chest checked. Well, you don't do that. You don't do that. Because that's sort of association type of thing. Somebody else is sick, so you want to be sick. Somebody else has a problem, so you want a problem. You want to be understood and you want to be blessed. And that doesn't work that way. And when you start speaking about it that way, the rest of the world says, ha, 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 another case of wolf, but no wolf. The little boy who called wolf just to get the people up there to be around him as he was tending the sheep. And pretty soon, when the wolf did come, the people said, ha, he's always calling wolf. Never, as my mom and dad told us kids, never holler help when you're in swimming unless you really need it. Never say anything else. Scream your heads off, have a ball, do everything, but never holler help. Never. If you need help, we're running out there. Nothing's going to stop us. We'll walk on water to get to you. But don't holler help unless you really need it. Anything else you want to holler, stop your heads off. That's what the lake is for. Have a good time. Just do wonderful things. But never holler help. So, as I go around giving seminars around the world, I hear many people hollering help. They say they want to come to America. They say they want to have the courses free. They say they want this. They say they want that. Every one of those people I ignore. I ignore them not because they're not nice people, but because they're beggars. They are just simple beggars. If they would come up to me and say, I like that philosophy. I like this idea that you said so-and-so. I like that. When you said that by changing our thoughts we can change our world, that's wonderful. I would just love to get your booklet or to know more about it. How do I do it? But no, they come up first off and they say, I want to take your course. I want to sign up for it. And I don't say, you can't sign up until you read the syllabus. You got to know what the rules are. But I don't care. I want the course. They don't want the course. They just want something for free. Because each one of those people who take in for free have not followed through and done their lessons. So, you know, they've built up an image for themselves. But anyone who comes to me and talks with an open heart and discusses what it is that's on their heart, I'll give them the shirt off my back. I'll give them anything I have in keeping with their sincerity. And some people just get toilet paper. But that's not bad. I was in one seminar and we didn't have any paper. And so I had to write affirmations for people on toilet paper. Fortunately, it was the European type toilet paper, which was very stiff and hard, and you could write on it very well. Not like the American soft kind, you know. And maybe the Europeans are getting the soft kind now too. But you see, when you listen to people's hearts, you really understand them. You really understand. I was in Nigeria, I guess, or Ghana, whatever it was, and we were at a very rich lady's house. And the rich lady had many rich friends attending the seminar. She had maybe about 30 people there in that round outdoor building that we were in. Really lovely, maybe more. And afterwards, the young people could not keep themselves from flocking around Ellen and I. We won't take your course, we won't take your course. We've heard that before, of course. And then they said, and we can afford it, we can afford it. They didn't do it yet, but they want to take the course and we can afford it. You see, so they are on the other spectrum. We can buy our way into understanding. And the other ones are, we want to have it rub off by association. But with all people, it's not to buy your way in or rub off by association. It's a matter of listening within yourself and inner application. And when you have inner application, then you have it. Now, I don't care. I'm like Ramakrishna. And Ramakrishna goes around giving out books. I think he's dead now. But he goes around giving out his books to everybody, free, big, fat books. And most of them put them in their bookshelf and never look at them because it's not... And it's okay stuff, but it's not their way of looking at it. It's a Hindu way of looking at it. And people want our stuff. And that's why I think we should have something of our stuff with us at every seminar. Tons of it. And you know what that tons of stuff is? That tons of stuff are business cards. They want something. And they want our business cards. And on our business cards, we should print some beautiful positive statement. Run off 20 business cards of one positive statement, another one, 20, you know, and so they never know what positive statement they're going to get. You never know which one you're handing out. But they just want that. I'm all out of booklets, all out of syllabuses, all out of just, haven't you got a business card? At least a business card? At least a business card? They said it so often, you know. And so, really, there's something to that. And you can carry a lot more business cards than you can magazines. And it's a wonderful way of sharing and doing things. And the little children who would never do anything with a business card, maybe put in a drawer. 10 years later, they're 10 years older. They open it up and they say, oh, hey, I'm ready for that now, you know? You never know. But what happens to me during seminars? I become the most great, sensitive, caring listener to my audience that you can imagine. And I love it. And I love you.